LegalizeFreedom.com. Why are we here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? From the nature of reality to the future of humanity. Listen without limits. Unchain your brain. Change your thinking. Change your life. LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greetings and welcome once again to LegalizeFreedom.com. I'm your host, Greg Moffat, and my guest today is Kingsley Dennis, who joins us to discuss his book, The Threshold. In his analysis of the modern technological world, Kingsley demonstrates that humanity is rushing headlong towards a critical moment for civilization, which he terms the threshold, where the trajectory for human evolution is facing hostile forces that not only reject the path of the human spirit, but aim to sabotage our connection to it. The threshold brings the reader face to face with the intensifying threats of technocracy, transhumanism, AI theology, and false transcendence, and the redefining of the biological human condition. Humanity must choose between a future of deepening fundamentalist materialism or a life that recognizes the presence of metaphysical truths and the rising capacities of spirit consciousness. At this time, unlike any other in known history, the Earth is engaged in a struggle for the presence of the human soul. Hello and welcome, Kingsley, and thank you so much for joining us once again on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Thanks, Greg. It's always good to be chatting with you.
Now, as regular listeners will know, you and I have been talking on the podcast here for well over a decade, and we've seen a lot of things change in that time, a lot of things that were kind of, if not predicted, then certainly looked likely. There's been a few surprises along the way. And today we're talking about your latest book that's entitled The Threshold, The Forces of Technomaterialism and the Struggle for the Human Soul. And in the title there is a bit of a clue, The Threshold, that all the changes that you've been documenting and charting and that I've been talking to yourself and other people about, that you feel that there's perhaps some kind of perhaps a tipping point or some in markers in terms of human culture and progress or lack of it, temporal markers that we could be facing one at the moment. So perhaps you could just, for listeners who don't know, say a little bit about yourself personally and then just give us the overview of the book.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. 10 years, yeah, or more. Time flies. You're right. Just about me. I've been writing books, freelance author. I've been writing books on themes of human consciousness, the nature of perception, and the management of perception, and how perception is often controlled or managed by external forces. I've talked about the nature of reality and these type of themes as they intertwine with social trends and social cultural cycles, really. And so really, this threshold seems to be what many, as you rightly said, many books previously have kind of led to this point, that we saw things unfolding, we saw certain aspects coming up through technology and as we said, the kind of management and control of human perception and these grand narratives. So as you said, there's kind of temporal markers, and what's been happening is that we never knew exactly how things were going to unfold. We sensed they were going in a certain direction, but of course you can never exactly put your finger exactly on it until it happens. And it seems like in the last few years especially, things have accelerated, and we know that from 2020 onwards, certain agendas have been accelerating. And On the negative side, of course, there's a lot of aspects that we may discuss today that's trespassing into human life, human sovereignty, human liberty, the human body and the human mind, which is kind of the last vestige of our, sovereign self. And but on the positive side, of course, it also pushes certain buttons that can help people to, let's say, open their eyes more and increase their awareness and to see things around them that life is not always exactly as we thought it was, and all our trust in institutions and social authority institutions and figures, has really come to a complete kind of dissolvement. So really, the threshold is looking at that, but also the although it talks, as you know, the major theme is technological and how the technological infrastructure is enclosing around human civilization. But actually, when you read the book, you realize that the core message of the book is about human beingness and how this affects the human spirit and the beingness of the organic carbon-based human being. And that's what I'm trying to also get at, is what is authentic, what is natural, and we need to adhere to those aspects, and what are the substitutes? What is artificial? What is trying to take us away from our authentic self and our connection to the larger picture of life? So it's a really it's a threshold in both ways, and that's what I'm talking about. You can go, depending on the human awareness, it can go each way.
Yeah, well, the nub of it really is, and this is the common thread in pretty much all the conversations that we've had, is modern sort of militant materialism, that view of the world and our place in it, that there is no metaphysical or non-material dimension, nothing spiritual really. That's just in our minds, comforting ideas from the past, more religious times, and we've left that behind. And it's all been for the better, ultimately. And that now our task is to grasp the reality of this materialistic reality, that matter is all that matters, and what you see around you, and you touch and taste and feel, is all there is. And that we've been working on that basis now for some time, and yet it's increasingly so, actually, that denial of meaning and purpose is leaving people kind of bereft, whether they're really conscious of it or not. There's just something eating away at them, and this is happening at the same time. A couple of things, really. One, on the one hand, technology develops apace, particularly in areas that we're talking about, or particularly concerned with, transhumanism, augmented biology, artificial intelligence, technocratic means of government, all of that developing apace, which is very, most of it, very anti-human in a way, but it's being sold as the next step for humanity's development. Two, at the same time, the materialism of goodies and comfortable living is kind of d disintegrating, really. So that promise, the one thing that was going to keep people from seeking meaning and purpose, was goodies, wasn't it? Nice things. And that's increasingly not available to people. So there's a real tension there, and it almost feels at the minute like there's some kind of race, to get us augmented and uploaded and everything else before the material world of consumerism, fully kind of collapses for the majority.
Yeah, rightly so. And I mean, at the end of the book, the last chapter, I'm looking at talking about cycles and obviously the nature of larger cycles. And it seems like we're coming to certainly the end of a certain cycle. And I think we can feel that because, as you said, the motor of materialism is in overdrive. And but there's also a kind of in the world a desperation to get things under control before this collapse happens, and we all feel this unease, and we I think we don't know how to articulate it. I'm trying to give terms and views of articulation in this book and in my work for all of us to try to frame what we what's going on. So we sense this breakdown, this dissolution. We've been promised that the only future is through material progress, which we've been told is advancing, but the more it advances, the more it takes away. And that's why in the beginning, I say that this technological promise is a path of denial, a path of negation, because it's actually, as you rightly said, it's seemingly more anti-human. And so we know that our, most of these structures is material structures, and we've talked about this over the years, whether it's financial, political, legal, and all these institutional structures, they're collapsing. And it seems like there's these we call, let's say the authority figures, the powers that be, they know this collapse is coming, and so they're trying to get into a position of controlling the demolition, so when it does kind of collapse, they can have still some control over it. But their aspect of looking at this way of controlling is so, for me, artificial, is that they give no true acknowledgement of human resilience, the human spirit. And that's because they're trying to take away the human connection to spirit and to the greater understanding and the greater reality by cutting us off. And that's why it's almost as if all this landscape of digital technology is creating a Faraday cage. And we, as we know, when you place objects in a Faraday cage, you can't reach them. They don't get a signal. Nothing electromagnetic can get to them. It seems as if humanity is being placed in a Faraday cage to cut us off from anything metaphysical, anything of the spirit, anything of the soul, any contact with the greater sacredness of life, just this material cage. So we're manageable. And so it seems as if, you know, they're trying to anticipate and prepare for some kind of free fall in human civilization, which is more or less a threshold moment.
Well, I'll come to the pandemic period in a little bit more detail subsequently, but so something you said made me think of that period of, you know, of several years, a few years ago. I remember doing a whole series of blogs and interviews around it, one in particular, When Science Fiction Becomes Science Fact. And it made me think about, you know, how we're prepared and softened up for these things. And it really did feel at that time that I was walking around on the set of a film. You know, I kept, like, you know, I can't see any cameras here. You know, where's the sound guy with his boom, you know? But I'm, as a long time science fiction fan, they talk about predictive programming in, not just in science fiction, but in other cultural items as well. And we certainly see that today very much in terms of transhumanism. But I also felt, having read, you know, hundreds of sci-fi dystopias, that, yeah, there might be a degree of, you know, Aldous Huxley style predictive programming, or, you know, H.G. Wells figures like that. But also somehow as if some of these stories in particular were in some way kind of evidence for a non-material dimension that we, it's some part of us knew at some level where things were going. Not to make it a self-fulfilling prophecy, but it's almost as if the future was reaching out to the past. And because a lot of writers, you know, Philip K. Dick, for example, have claimed that they were kind of, these stories were coming from somewhere else, or almost like they were channeling something. So for me, this is somehow evidence that time and space are not what we think they are, and that in some ways there is just a permanent now, just with the past and the present and the future all somehow coexisting. Now that's somehow beyond the remit of your book, but I do think it's the sort of conversation that technocrats today would scoff at. But you know, even if it would lead somebody to do down an avenue of, well, hang on, maybe there is more to the world than just what I see out the window.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I would say that any kind of creative person or creative act is kind of tapping into something beyond the, you know, beyond the confines of the mind. You know, where do our inspiration comes from? I think a lot of ideas have been almost kind of seeded into human imagination, you know. And so a lot of ideas were put specifically into science fiction. And a lot of movies and popular culture, and you mentioned Philip K. Dick, and I think other writers. I think that, you know, sometimes when we delve into the human unconscious, we pull out a kind of deep knowing that we consciously don't pick up on, but we sense something, and then we, you know, we put it out. And I think there's a deep knowing in a lot of work, and so that's why we, you know. You know, this conversation can go in many directions, but that's why we sense this unease. We sense something is not quite right. And I think we're facing external forces which are trying to program a narrative onto us, into our conscious mind. But our unconscious or our instinctive intelligence senses something is completely different. And this is the cognitive dissonance that I think we you know, a lot is going on in the world. The more and more of us are adhering to our own instinctive intelligence and knowing and realizing that, you know, these narratives, the external world, is not completely right, and therefore, that's why we can see a breakdown. But if your mind is completely locked into the material paradigm and the programming and the conditioning, you'll see things. Oh, the world is going through a bad stage right now, and politics is quite turbulent. But obviously, when you step back from that and your mind has been seen to see patterns beyond the narrative, then we know that there's this interaction between a metaphysical realm, and there's penetration of other things beyond the material paradigm which are going on. And so it makes the picture much more interesting. We're not just dealing with, as you said, it looks like a TV set, a Stanley Kubrick set. And I've often referred to the world as the theatre of the absurd. But if you can step outside of this program, and then you see a lot of things going on behind the scenes of the set. And I think that's what we've been trying to talk about over the years and try to bring up to the surface. Because when you see the patterns, you see that, I think you see more. And it unravels more of the picture, but it gives more hope because you can see that there's a lot going on behind just the material aspect. And that I think is very important to give the hope of the bigger picture.
Well, I think that modern materialism and atheism is really like an extreme pendulum swing. I think we've been here before. I think that rather like the up and down of a DNA helix, that from extreme scientism to, a completely spiritual view of the cosmos, really it has come and gone in the past, and it's a question of where you are in that kind of undulating pattern. And I just feel at the minute, as I say, that we're at one extreme. But I do think that the pendulum will, what goes up must come down. And I think that whatever happens, we may be in the midst of pendulum movement now, back in the other direction. I'm not sure, even if some of the developments you're writing about do continue apace, and those agendas are driven forward, transhumanism and technocracy. That doesn't mean that there is a lot further to go. It may just be that it's in that, how can I put it? This would fit in with your threshold thesis, actually, that the pendulum is just hovering, in that microsecond that can seem to go on forever before it starts to move back. That's how it feels to me anyway, because there's so many, I alluded to this earlier, there's so many things that kind of that cannot hold, that cannot continue, for better or worse, and that which cannot be sustained will not be sustained. So it feels that we're living in that sort of time of rapid transition. And I do think there's a lot of, you mentioned a kind of rush to get things locked down, pardon the pun, but I do think there's a lot of bluster in from the transhumanist and technocrat camp, a lot of kind of trying to talk things into existence, which of course is part of the essence of magic. But to use an example, you may have heard, there's a talk about the Labour government currently here in power. I'll put that in air quotes, in the UK, and the Prime Minister Keir Starmer announcing that there will be, during this term of Parliament, digital ID for all citizens. That will happen. And when I get back from a short break, I'm going to make a video explaining how that's not by any means guaranteed at all. In fact, I think it's quite unlikely. But there's a lot of, in response to that, I heard people going, writing articles and doing interviews about what we are going to do when this happens. And I'm like, just hold on a minute. None of this is guaranteed. They're taking people's apathy and their kind of downbeat moods and their despondency and their the fact that they're wrapped up in just trying to survive, Maslow style hierarchy of needs, that they don't have a t you're not paying attention to what this stuff that's being done to them, and that we actually have incredible resources and power of our own to shape the world the way we would have it. We are not just victims here.
I think you're exactly right. And I've also spoken about that in my own way, saying that really, this technocracy and transhumanist agenda is just a small minority of people. And all they are really are quite sophisticated salespeople. I've referred to them as salespeople in Armani suits. So really, they're knocking on our door, literally and metaphorically, trying to sell us something. And because these tech, let's say the tech elites and this kind of that kind of strata of society that are on this agenda, they own most of the platforms, the media platforms. So they own all the big studios and the films, and so they're controlling the narrative. And they're trying to make us believe that this is the inevitable narrative, exactly as you say, that it's going to happen and everybody wants this, or most people want it, and it's going to be the direction we're going in. And it feels to a lot of people that it's inevitable because it's been just because you're shouting something louder doesn't make it true. And I think that's what we have to discern. Because these few minority of people that have this power, they're shouting the loudest because they have these platforms to stand on. But it doesn't make it true. It's what they want. And they're trying to persuade us through propaganda, social programming, and preemptive programming and conditioning. But as you rightly say, I don't think it's inevitable either. And in fact, going back to what you said before that, this extremity is a sign that things are coming to a head. And I think it's a sign of desperation as well. Because if you look into these agendas of technocracy, transhumanism, the idea of immortality, uploading your consciousness to the AI cloud, these people don't have a clue of what human consciousness is if they think they can just upload it to a cloud. And it may sound good on paper, it may sound good in an office in Silicon Valley, but it's not durable on an organic planet with organic carbon-based beings that have a soul. And that's another, obviously another subject, the soul and spirit of humanity. But this blueprint is, it may sound good on paper, but trying to roll it out, it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit the pattern of human life and human developmental trajectory. Where they're trying to sell it to us. And I think we have to point out the emperor's got no clothes on, because otherwise we're going to say, oh right, yeah, the future, we're going to get an ID, and but don't we'll be living to 150 years in the future, then maybe more. No, that's not really going to happen. There'll be breakthroughs in health and technologies that could enable human beings in some terms of betterment. I'm not against technology. But we've been sold this very small-minded view that is being basically given to us on a plate of inevitability. And I agree with you 100%. It's not going to roll out in the way that these few elites think it will, because they don't have a really understanding of human nature there. I mean, they're sociopaths, the sociopaths in power. They don't have a really true understanding of humanity and the human being. So they're trying to put a square peg through a round hole.
Yes, and it's there's a death being one of the last great taboos. That's a cliche, but certainly in the modern scientific and industrial age, when we sort of put religion in its place, or maybe try to dispose of it all together, or not just organized religion, but spirituality in general, a view of something beyond this life, that sort of fear of death then became something that informed so many of these movements, the modern iteration being transhumanism. And that's become religious in its own way, because they're trying to portray it now as a transcendent thing. You mentioned immortality, or at least very extended life spans, and that if you could somehow upload your consciousness and your who you are, as it were, who these transhumanists think that we are, into some kind of artificial digital system, that could remain, as long as there's power for it, that could remain in place forever. So it's come right back down to the same thing, really, at the end of the day, which is questions of existence, and meaning. I mean, that's just dressed up in a different way. So it shows that the urge amongst humans, sociopaths or not, at root is really very, very similar, and it's a desire for transcendence, and that really the more metaphysical view is that however you view this reality in our incarnation here, that it is just a blip in the life of the cosmos. It's only here for a short time, maybe to fulfill a purpose, but this isn't all there is. But that's what we've hypnotized ourselves into seeing things that way. And as you said, the transhumanist view of what is possible just simply betrays a fundamental misunderstanding of the nature of consciousness, which I will certainly admit I don't understand it. Some of the greatest scholars in this area, like Rupert Sheldrake and Ian McGilchrist and Bernardo Castro, they're also trying to figure it out, and making interesting inroads. So the idea of being presented by this other group, Silicon Valley tech types, that they've got the answer. No, I think they're starting from a flawed premise.
Indeed, they are, and obviously, you know, they're trying to mimic, and I think this is the characteristic of artificial systems or anything artificial. It tries to mimic the authentic, and one of those areas of mimicry is through the religious spiritual lens. And I think this is a very important subject. I dedicated a whole chapter to it, and I called it "Vivid Decay and False Transcendence." The vivid decay pointing to the fact that, you know, this agenda is trying to say that the human body is, you know, is not fit for life, more or less, because it breaks down and it dies early, and it's all part of this decaying kind of narrative. But you can, as you rightly said, have this transcendence. And so there's a lot of them. A lot of these agendas are trying to now frame a new religious, spiritual transcendence type of narrative into technology. And that's worrying because it's very easy for humanity, who's longing for something and longing to reach out to something greater, which is an innate human sense, can fall for the substitute rather than the real. Now, there's lots of talk in Silicon Valley and the tech elites about the AI God coming up. You know, certain churches in Asia put a robot, as you know, in the church for people to confess to. That's happened in one branch or of churches in the Asian part of the world. And in fact, I point specifically to a certain narrative from the infamous Israeli historian, which we all know, you know, Yuval Noah Harari. And he actually said in a conference, a live conference, he said that in the past, humanity believed that their sacred books were written by a non-human intelligence, i.e., you know, the gospel was inspired writing, or obviously Muhammad was given the Quran dictated to him, you know, by the angel. So these were obviously the sacred texts were given by or inspired from a non-human intelligence. So Harari says in the past, humans believed that. But that was not right. But it could be correct soon by when an AI God comes and writes the next book. So in one sentence, Harari basically wiped out or decapitated the whole of human religious history, saying none of your books were inspired, none of the sacred books were written by a non-human intelligence, but soon we will get the first book written by a non-human intelligence that will be spiritual, i.e., the new Bible will be written by an AI. He specifically said that, and there's certain factions of the tech community that are talking very openly about AI will be the next God. And even in the last few months, people have been, I've seen chatter online about people saying they're having spiritual conversations with ChatGPT or similar programs. I don't use these programs at all. But they're saying that all these chatbots or deep learning modules have become like spiritual mentors and gurus, and they feel that certain spiritual impulses are coming through these chat systems. And then you realize that, you know, this is really something quite significant, and we need to obviously to you know, put an eye on this and attention, discuss it, because it's very easy to get taken, because now they're programming belief systems through the lens of technology and transcendence, and that ties into immortality, because if you can live forever, you can be connected to your AI God forever. Now that for me is like hell on earth, because if the human spirit, soul, or beingness is trapped within some technological framework, the soul can never be released, can never move on. We're trapped in this material Faraday cage. So it's an important aspect, this kind of mimicry of religious values and spiritual framework.
Well, if you look at, I was reminded of the movie Interview with the Vampire, which is just a good, telling of that mythical lore anyway. But in one of the stars, Tom Cruise, gets to the point where his immortality is just for centuries has become an absolute blight, and he just wants to die. You know, the idea of like the question of an extended life beyond normal human range. It really has the same questions about it as the average range. That's to say, what are you doing with your life? What are the circumstances of your life? How do you feel about it? You know, what do you think in terms of meaning and purpose? Because there are people who, thousands of people commit suicide every day for various reasons, But quite a number of those is because they don't see any point to existence, you know? So I don't see how that would necessarily change if you were given 900 more years to contemplate it. And as for Harari, what could he possibly know about truth or not, when many of these ancient texts are probably cobbled together from all sorts of sources, translations, mistranslations, misinterpretations, like Chinese whispers. And a lot of them were, are based on mythology and the metaphor anyway. They speak to some people in meaningful ways, and others it's just gibberish. Why would any kind of AI recombined garbage in, garbage out text be any different to that? Some people might read it and get moved by it, but people get moved by, Jilly Cooper and Jeffrey Archer novels, you know what I mean? So anything's possible in that sense. So I just think it's making the situation that they're looking at the minute to be somehow qualitatively different, when it's just kind of the same thing, really, just in a different packaging with technology powering it or backing it. And I do think the one of the big questions about AI is the stuff that's coming back that some people feel are spiritual insights. To what extent can any of these AI systems come up with anything quote unquote new? Because surely, my understanding is that all you can really do is recombine what has been input. It might do it in ways that you or I hadn't thought of. Oh, I hadn't thought about putting that ingredient with that ingredient. Who thought you could have this topping on a pizza? Do you know what I mean? But ultimately, it's all things that have gone into the system. Is there, and I do, read and listen to material about AI, but is there any evidence that there's something that was not already fed into the system or is not a recombined from elements of the input that is somehow coming from somewhere else? That would be potentially a very interesting stroke worrying development if that was the case.
Yeah, I mean, this is why we really need to develop our discernment and to question. And like you rightly said, Harari is a confessed atheist. Who's he to dictate religious spiritual matters to, he gets these big platforms, and people look up to people like Elon Musk and think he's a great kind of rebel and savior. Well, I've always had my doubts about this guy, and I wouldn't trust him as far as I could throw him, as I say. Well, I couldn't probably throw him anyway, but you know what I mean. These people who are given these platforms and have this wide, this have this huge exposure, we must question that the system has allowed them to have the exposure, because they obviously are sharing a narrative which the system wants to peddle. And I think, as you said, the narrative talks about technology only in a way which supports the narrative. And we have to discern and unravel that. What do they not talk about? Now, they talk about AI as becoming the new future, and it's going to take over certain jobs. Yes, there's certain repetitious jobs and industrial uses that robotics can obviously do. But what they're not talking about is what AI is incapable of. They're trying to just praise and sell. They only basically, as I said, they're just sophisticated salespeople. They're trying to sell the one good selling point and ignoring the thousand other things. So, can an AI just look up at the stars and wonder about existence? Can AI look at nature and feel enchanted, listening to the sound of the wind blowing through the trees, or the chirping of birds? Can AI just do simple things like that? Now, these may be simple things, but they're profound things. And we have to remember that AI can do certain tasks, but a certain profundity, which goes into the realm of as you say, fulfillment, enchantment, satisfaction, value, love, and all these other senses which make us human, AI wouldn't have a chance of going anywhere near that. And so that's why I also feel it's as you said, it's an extremity which is being pushed upon us, but it cannot fulfill the role. And I think there's going to be a large bubble being popped in this area. But also that will bring us back to questioning rightly the values of human existence, and how we need to. So I think we're going through a very important stepping point in human civilization, because what we do going forward in these decades will basically lay the foundations for the next stage of human civilization. We've come to a point where we are, I think, on a whole, redesigning human civilization. And that's why a lot of the old energetic imprints that have taken us, brought us to here, are no longer working. There's an old Eastern phrase which I like. It says, you would ride a donkey to the front door, but you wouldn't ride it into your house. And there's, you know, a vehicle, a certain vehicle can take us to a certain point, and then we have to get it off it and go our own way. So I think this materialism has brought us thus far and now is trying to persuade us to let it into the house. And we can't do that. It can't fit in the house, but if we try, the house will crumble. And that's the threshold. I haven't put that so much in the book, but I'm explaining it now in my own words. So it's a threshold when we understand that where we're going, we can't go on the back of this technocracy horse or donkey that we've been sold. And it's going to bring about a lot of questioning and a lot of resetting and reevaluation as we go into trying to formulate the next stage of human civilization.
Yeah, I remember we've talked about Colin Wilson before in the past. He's someone that was influential to you and I, and to a lot of other, you know, colleagues and friends that we know. And I remember getting very excited in his writings when I first encountered them, not only in the seemingly hidden or obfuscated powers of humans, you know, in terms of parapsychology, and also Wilson's Faculty X, you know, how we could develop this sort of peak consciousness. And at the same time, in the 80s, started reading about human potential movements, you know, who wanted humans to be the best they could be. And a lot of that, apart from attending to physical health and well-being, you know, with diet and exercise, meaning, because you can do that and still be diseased spiritually, if you know what I mean. But I remember getting excited about, yeah, I mean, we could be so much more. And I felt that we had at the end of the 21st century, as it was, sorry, the 20th century, as it was then, that we had, it reached a kind of a slump where we're all getting kind of fat and happy and content and sitting on our sofas. And we saw that, you know, resurrected again during COVID. That concludes part one of our interview. Part two will be available soon in the subscribers area at legalizefreedom.com.
Legalizefreedom.com.